So I'm in the studio and Jeff's listening to voicemails, which is just fantastic radio. But he almost stopped. I think he's done. Headphones are coming on. Yay. Hi, Jeff.
Hi,
Hey,
Sonny.
welcome back.
Welcome. Okay.
How are the voicemails?
I have a guest in town,
Oh.
so they were good.
Are they staying with you?
They are staying with me.
I
It's called being a
imagine.
good host, something you probably don't know a whole lot about.
I imagine you're a great host.
You're right, I am, because I'm diligent and I do respond to voicemails. I don't just let them flutter off into the ether like you probably did.
Come on, come on. So, you interviewed. Who did you interview? You have no idea. I guess I've got the list. Dow. You interviewed Dow.
Dow Strom.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dow Strom's great.
Yeah. Have you ever read Dow's work before?
I have read Dow's work. We talked more about music, actually, though, and I've seen Dow play. I saw her play at Beacon Sound, the record store in on Mississippi in North Portland. And she's both a musician and a writer, and she has a new book recently out and also a new album that I got. It's a lathe cut, so it's like a square record. It's super cool. And she played at Beacon Sound. It's really good. And I'm actually, it's funny you said, I'm going to see her read tomorrow at Ford Food and Drink as part of the Switch reading series.
Oh.
So we kind of, we this interview was fun. She was in Iceland. I was in Iceland. We talked a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about Iowa City. We talked a little bit about her kind of getting into music in the first place. She got into like country and kind of narrative things, which, as we discussed, some people were kind of surprised by, or I guess people in her life. So yeah, it was a good, yeah, I mean, she's a potent force of words and sounds.
That's good.
I
I'm
was
trying to.
this
What?
your repartee is not really doing it for me. So I guess we can go right into Dow Strom.
I wanted to talk some more with you.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I've been alone a lot this week, so I thought I'd had a chance to talk to Jeff.
So during our Dow Strom interview
Yeah.
intro, you would,
Yeah, pretty
well,
much.
I think timing is an important part in knowing relationship boundaries, and that's something that maybe you can work on, and then I'll work on being open to your not so subtle needs for attention.
Wait, hold on. Let me just write this down. Timing.
Just use shorthand.
Jeff will work on a lot of things himself because he's got a lot. Okay. Cool. Anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, this was another interview that I did alone, and this one went pretty well. We were in the better studio than this studio.
Yeah, this
We were
is
in
a
the
great.
brighter studio. I call it the, you know, maybe the Walmart studio because it's got the bright lights. This has actually has the better lights.
Yeah, I prefer this studio.
So do I.
Oh, okay.
But it looks more up to date.
It's newer. All the equipment in the room where you interviewed Dow, all the equipment there is newer.
Yeah.
But this
Well, it
has
feels
a,
newer.
yeah, this feels more homey. Like there's some kind of, I don't know if it's rug. What is on the walls?
This has that WKRP in Cincinnati vibe. What was
Yeah.
the name of that show? Was it WKRP?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's wrong, but.
But it feels like it would not be inappropriate to wear corduroy, like a full outfit of corduroy in this room.
No. I mean, no. But I would do that anyways. Society doesn't dictate who I am. Dow Strom.
Wait, you want to cut it short? All right, here we go, Dow.
No, I mean, I just. Do we want to just keep going? Were you having fun there?
We can keep going. I'm still
No.
rolling. Welcome to the steer. Is that good? Is that
Yeah,
a good
that's good.
intro?
That's
Thanks.
really kind of like.
A good intonation?
Well, I don't mean on the air, but I just mean in general because. Well, whatever. Yeah. So how are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, you, because this is going to go on the radio and
Okay.
we can't swear.
Okay.
So
All right.
potty mouth. I'm not assuming that you will have potty
No,
mouth,
I'm
but
like probably, yeah. I've got pretty good self-control.
okay. Well, your parents were writers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But they were not musicians.
No. No. Yeah, the music's kind of, yeah, my own thing that evolved. Yeah.
And how did that happen, I guess, initially?
Well, are we recording? Should I go ahead?
We're
going.
The story? This is real now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I started playing actually kind of like later, like in my early 20s. So uh-huh. I never really thought about playing music when I was growing up. My sister was actually the musician in the house. She like took opera lessons and piano. Oh. And I really like started playing music kind of at the same time that I went into graduate school at the Iowa Writers Workshop. I had a boyfriend who like taught me some chords on the guitar and helped me buy my first guitar. And I really just wanted to learn how to play and sing. And kind of what got me into music and singing was like country music, mm-hmm. which I know sounds like sort of uncharacteristic.
Why uncharacteristic?
Just because, I guess, because I'm an Asian woman and I didn't uh-huh. like grow up in that. But I grew up in like this, you know, white rural setting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about country music, and then I kind of discovered it, and I thought it was weird and funny at first. Like just like the bad kind of modern, you know, contemporary country music, and then I like kind of found older. So it was like voices like Loretta Lynn, which is why I put that on like women's voices, and you know, feminist in their own way, but really also feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And then harmonies like Alison Krauss and like some of the bluegrass. So that was like kind of the first music that got me into like wanting to sing or just liking the way it sounded. And
you discovered that was this played in your household? Because you're like, you were living outside Sacramento at this point.
Yeah, I grew up in Placerville.
Oh, okay. So
I do know.
Actually, one of my best friends, Flynn, is from Placerville.
Okay.
Because I'm from Northern Nevada. So, I know Placerville. Right, I've been there. I mean, it's been like 10 years, but I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a lot of years.
So it's small.
I've been there. Yeah, but it was basically like, it's where gold was discovered. So I grew up like on the American River. You know, like kids would like, you know, we'd play in the river and there was like rafting, and I grew up with horses.
Oh.
So like I don't know. But I didn't grow up with music. So
wasn't in the household really.
Not really. Like I think the first music I ever heard was the Beatles, and my mom was like, you know, she had listened to the Beatles in the '60s. So it wasn't like a big part, and of course I like listened to music and liked it like through high school. But it was really like those voices, and maybe like the songs are so narrative too. So there was something interesting about like place, and that there were like these little stories within the songs. And then there were just these elements of Americana, which were like rivers and roads and mountains and, you know, missing like some small town or missing some like, you know, place, that was interesting to me, I think, also from the perspective of being a writer, like that these tropes that were being played with, and they're American, like they're Americana, and I think that was like I was just first discovering that stuff.
Were you writing at this point?
I was writing like fiction. I wrote throughout my childhood.
Oh, so you said the whole.
But I just wrote like you know. Just, I mean, I wrote silly, stupid stories that were like,
well, I think everyone,
like the movies I was watching in the 80s, like, or episodes of 21 Jump Street or something.
But I mean, did you show them to people? I mean, it was instilled in you to a certain degree, writing.
Yeah.
I mean,
like writing was something that was with me throughout my childhood because my mom was a writer. Mm-hmm. So she encouraged us to have like our imaginary worlds. So, you know, my sister and I would spend a lot of time writing and drawing, like just, and I was quiet and I was shy and I was out of place. So writing was definitely like a refuge for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place where I could create my own worlds, and I was pretty good at it, or people noticed that I was good at it. Like my English teachers, you know, noticed that I was a good writer. So that was always like something that I felt like, you know, I didn't actually think about studying it, but I ended up, like, after undergraduate,
Where you studied film, right?
I studied film, yeah. So I was, you know, so, I kind of had these bigger ideas of, you know, doing something that was just a, you know, a more fun medium in a way than what I thought of writing at the time. Like
Because it was so something that was kind of a part of you, you sometimes people...
Yeah, maybe. It was like, well, you know, when you're like 18 or 19, like I read, but I also kind of thought it was like, you know... like not as cool as like
right.
filmmaking or something like that. Like
I
it
would
was,
say that's probably true to this day, but
you know, yeah, like there's something more dynamic about, you know, just, I don't know, just something that involved more technical, you know, challenges than just sitting in my, but it was good for me like to learn those technical challenges and how to think about things like making art in technical ways.
As just, a film.
Yeah. Like okay. problem solving and just, you know, like, logistics and, mm-hmm. and place and like actually just the limits of like what you have, the tools you have to work with, and then being visual, like I also thought about things visually, but yeah, like I guess about the same time that I was like in graduate school and I was writing short stories or trying to,
but it was and, always such a thing because I mean I just read the Iowa Pastoral thing where
the essay, yeah.
Their essay in Guernica, where you win a prize as, how old were you?
I was young. I was like 19 or 20 when I wrote that story, and then I sent it to that prize, and I was like 22. So it was like,
and what was the prize?
The Nelson Algren Award.
Okay.
So it was published by the Chicago Tribune.
Which is a real legit thing.
It was a pretty big, like, it was a short story prize, and like the prize was like $5,000,
which sizable. Is like a I lot mean, for then and now,
a short story,
especially for something that you. I mean, the way in the essay, at least, it was almost you dashed it off. It wasn't like a serious thing.
It was like, I think that, but this might be reflective of like how I work. Like, I wrote that story, and I was young, and I was kind of in that space of like, I heard a voice, and I like kind of, you know, like inhabited it and like mimicked it. Like, it was like this voice of, you know, that narration, like I was reading like Sam Shepard, and mm-hmm. I really liked the movie Badlands, which I talk about in the essay. And I think that in a way, and it's part of like the person I am, but maybe also like it has to do with like, you know, being like growing up as a refugee or having to adapt to the culture. Like I think that I kind of mimicked voice. Like I was able to kind of mimic the voice, and that's kind of the same way I learned how to sing, like just by like, you know, listening and singing like along to these songs.
But and, as what would it be a more natural way than mimicking?
I don't know. Like, I guess learning, maybe coming at it from having taken a lot of lessons or learning craft. Like, I mean, maybe everybody writes like that. I mean, you know, do you think like, is that like,
well, no, that's just why I thought, I mean, I think everything's a mimic, whether it's a conscious mimic or not. It sounds like you were aware that this wasn't your background and you were writing within a framework that wasn't yours, but
like
sometimes people just take it for granted that they're like original, you know, like
that they're making up something
of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like in a way, I think that like kind of the endeavor of playing country music was at first also like kind of ironic.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, I recognized that, like, you know, that wasn't my background, or I didn't, there wasn't really, like, an image of somebody that looked like me that was, like, in that world.
Sure.
And so I, in my mind, maybe there was, like, a little bit of a, like, irony to it, where I would, like, you know, but I also took the music really seriously and sincerely, too. Like, I liked it, and I liked, you know, like
what you were listening to.
Yeah, I like
Loretta. Can you say it?
Which one?
Loretta Lynn. Who I like a lot, but yeah.
I mean, there's just stuff like she's funny, and her whole story is like really amazing. Like just, you know, like 14 or just, you know, she's like.
The Sissy Spacek movie.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
It's.
But it's based on her life, right?
Yeah.
The coal miner's daughter.
Yeah, like she was just. She got married when she was 14, and she's just like this small town rural person that had kids, and she's like a wife and a mother. And then she happened to like, you know, like end up like she was a good singer. Like she would just, you know, be singing to her kids. I guess I thought that was kind of cool. And then, you know, she ends up becoming Loretta Lynn. And there's just songs. I don't know. There's like a certain brand of like, you know, there's like songs about the birth control pill and about like
her songs.
Yeah. Okay. Like they're pretty feminist, but they're also like, you know, they're dated. Mm-hmm. But I mean, probably when that was happening in the '50s, that was like a pretty like strong, you know, sure. voice. And for a woman to be like steeped in kind of like the domestic life, but still be like kind of have this like strong voice was like interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought at the time, like that really like was, I hadn't encountered that, I guess, like so much growing up in California or listening to whatever I was listening to growing up, you know.
Sure.
But so
was it something that you thought I can do this?
No, not really.
I mean, so like, it was purely enjoyment. That
yeah, that was like I really wanted to, like, I enjoyed singing, and that was really what first got me into it. And I kind of just and I enjoyed, like, you know, I liked those songs. Like, there was also the thing about gospel songs, like mm-hmm. kind of those old gospel songs, like that had this, you know, quality of longing to them, and there are stories about exile, and there are stories about, like, you know, kind of longing to get back to some like lost or unattainable place. And I think that that the ethos of that also like appealed to me, like just maybe my own, I wasn't conscious of it, but my own cultural like background, like kind of that resonated, like the story of exile, the story of displacement.
Within country work, country music's framework.
Yeah,
kind
or
of,
just
which
like
is,
a song like I Am a Poor Wayfaring Stranger. Mm-hmm. Like that's a traditional song. So those were things that brought me into that realm of music that I thought were like, you know, that just, I guess they just resonated. But I didn't like, I mean, I did it for fun for a lot of years. And then
listening or playing?
Like playing, like just trying to learn how to play and sing. And it probably wasn't till like I was in Austin and I started like trying to write my own songs that like I like, you know, became interested in performing.
But just going back, when did you get your first guitar?
I bought my first guitar in New York City, like when I was 22, and it was like right before I was going to the Iowa Writers' Workshop.
And you had not, had you played guitar before? Had you doodled, not even like noodling on someone's?
No, but I had like friends who were musicians, you know, so I was always around, like I had a boyfriend who was a musician, which.
So you were around it.
Yeah, yeah. I was around people who were making music, like, you know, kind of regularly, but it wasn't really something that I thought about doing myself.
But then you get to Iowa. I mean, do you learn chords? How do you?
Yeah, I learned, you know, I guess I learned some chords, like just like the chord shapes. And then, you know, I had a chord book. A lot of it's self-taught. Mm-hmm. I learned from playing along with songs, like just listening to them and figuring them out, or like, you know, like.
But you have a good ear then.
I think it's gotten better over the years. But like that was also the really easy entry with country music, because a lot of them are like just, you know, three chords. Mm. So that was a really easy form to learn in a way, just as far as like chord structure goes, like mm-hmm. basic. There's more to it than that, obviously. Like some of them are more complicated than that. But a lot of them are just like three chords.
And a narrative.
Yeah.
And something that, yeah.
Yeah, and a strong voice. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, the voice is, like, always, like, a big element of it. And then I would say I learned a lot from, like, you know, hanging out with people, like, parties, like, people playing. And so, you know, anytime there was a chance to do that, I always learned a little bit more. But a lot of it was just, you know, there were times where I would just spend, like, you know, the whole afternoon or just days, like, playing and learning. So which is, I think, I guess if you want to do it, you'll, you know, like that's how a lot of people learn.
But you're in an atmosphere at this time that's really, maybe competitive isn't the word, but people are really artistically trying to
writing?
Yeah. That's, I mean, at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, trying to kind of like be the best.
Yeah.
I mean, was that a way to kind of get away from some of that type stuff playing?
Maybe. Like, it might sound kind of naive, like, where, like, I think I did, like, I think that I managed to, like, kind of stay clear of that. Mm-hmm. Though there was a lot. There was, like, so much social drama going on. Like, and, you know, people were young, and I was really young. And everyone's, you know, like there's a lot within that that's
sure.
like, but I think that I managed to, like, you know, I guess not, maybe not get caught up in it, or maybe not care so much.
So it had no impact on your music?
No, not on my music. Like, I really just, I was trying to learn how to play music at that time, and it would be nice if I felt like, you know, I was, like, getting somewhere with it. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, I guess music was, like, you know, maybe just a place where I wasn't having a lot of expectations of, like, mm-hmm. performing well or doing very much with it. And then, you know, and then everyone was more focused on writing. So I wasn't trying to prove myself as a musician, not when I was at Iowa.
Right. And then, so did you play at any open mics? Or, I mean, was it something purely kind of...
That wasn't until a little bit later after graduate school. So, like, I moved to San Francisco after Iowa. And I think, like, I played some open mics in San Francisco.
Was that a big deal?
It was, you know, nerve-wracking. Like, I would say that, like, there are good moments and there are, like, you know, torturous moments, like, in that process of putting yourself out in front of people. And, you know, I have like a lot of years of like self doubt and just insecurity about like whether I was like, you know, really a musician or not, or just how technically proficient, and that like, you know, still continues to like in ways too.
One of the musicians, I mean, we'll put this list on the website, yeah. Cat Power, I mean, who I think a lot of her career, she had those same type of things.
Yeah. She's like a pretty like, I mean, instrumental, or just what she plays is, like, a pretty minimal, like, mm-hmm. instrumental style. And I guess it's nice to, like, that is, like, a nice thing to encounter when somebody can do something that seems pretty simple but still has a lot of music in it. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, over the years, you know, just, like, there are times, like, I have encountered working with other musicians or just, you know, who are, like, really, really technically proficient. And
they're gearheads.
Yeah, or just they're sometimes they're like kind of snobby about it too.
Right. Well, that's yeah.
And I've definitely like, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to encounter that. And I've definitely, I think my path has gone through, you know, like a lot of my musical relationships have been with men and with white men, mm-hmm. you know, who are like either, you know, just like technically better musicians than me,
right?
And so it's like, yeah, there's definitely
which doesn't
that, like,
make them better musicians. I mean, you say technically,
yeah, like
which
they can,
is a big
they
word.
Can do more, but I think it's taken a lot for me to kind of arrive at like a place where like I understand a little better what my own style is and like mm-hmm. what my own capacities are and like and why. And, you know, like there were times, like I lived in Austin for a lot of years and, you know, I took bluegrass guitar lessons or something where there's like there's a lot of like technique and hierarchy in mm-hmm. that world.
In bluegrass.
Yeah. Like, or just like what is really good or what like is authentic, you know, like that's like how this type of music is played. And it's like... I think that I at some point realized that like I don't have any logic for this, but like I haven't been able to learn a lot from like kind of traditional lessons.
Oh.
Or like the way that, you know, I guess think many of the teachers that I've encountered like have explained music or like trying to learn how to read music, and I can like over the years I've learned more about it and I can do it with a, you know, great amount of effort. But I think it's just taken a lot of years to kind of like trust like my own instincts, and like I play the guitar, but like I don't know, I it's like I can't really like explain, like I'm not really technical about it, but like I know how to find my way around it, and I think I've like figured out my own way of using like, you know, chord shapes or chord voicings or and it didn't, like, learning blues scales or learning, like, whatever it is, like, the style that you're supposed to learn, you know, to solo or to play scales down, like, that it didn't work for me,
mm-hmm.
though I tried at different times.
Is that indicative of the way you learn? Like, yep. In workshops, in writing workshops?
It might be.
People say a bunch of stuff, and you're kind of like, you took it into account, and you're like, well, this is kind of my own vision?
Or like, I guess it's like maybe everybody does it. Like, just, you know, you take what you can use and mm-hmm. then you kind of adapt it in the ways that that you can use it. And I have had teachers along the way or just other friends who were like, you know, could explain something to me in a way that I could use it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So like with music, just learning something that I could like just, I don't, like, I can't explain it, but like, sure. learning something that's
like... But if
like,
you could explain it, it wouldn't be what it is.
Yeah, like you can take it away and you can use it right away and you can like kind of make something that is like music
mm-hmm.
in your own, you know, like the way that you feel it or something. Or so so I kind of approach techniques like that, or just, you know, like, yeah.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. But also, we talked to the writer Laura Gibson.
Yeah. And,
or no, I we talked to the musician Laura Gibson
yeah.
about uh-huh. writing.
Yeah.
And she makes her living being a musician.
Yeah.
But she also just got her MFA from Hunter College.
That's right.
Is it Hunter or Hunters? Hunter?
I don't know. Hunter College.
I think it's Hunter. And she just wrote a screenplay that went. Is in the second round of something at Sundance. So she's like a legit
yeah.
writer, but it's still something that I don't think if you asked her, and I don't want to speak for her really, but that she mm-hmm. would say, I'm a writer. She would say, I'm a musician. I mean, do you inhabit both of those things in like artistic circles? Or you...
I will say both, but I guess I feel like a little more like the writing is probably like, because I've published more as a writer, mm-hmm. And I've spent more years doing it, and I have a degree that allows mm. me to say I have an MFA in writing.
But in your bio, it says I write songs. I mean, it's yeah. not like you hide it.
That was kind of my, yeah, like I tried to just, I also write songs. It's like how I spoke about, you know, doing music for, like, yeah, it's another form of writing.
Sure.
But,
So you're in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And you're doing open mic. So it's something that, I mean, some people are hobbyists. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that was never you, because doing an open mic for the first time, it is nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, well, I did sure. I did stand-up last year for the first time,
okay.
and I did an open mic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
No
That's
one cared.
Hard.
I mean,
yeah.
no one cared, but
Yeah.
The six, I mean, it was a big deal, you know, like I was uh-huh. very nervous for six people who could have cared less.
Yeah.
I mean,
I still feel that way about performing in general.
Right.
Definitely.
But
yeah.
Even when you're reading or performing music or any?
Like both to mm-hmm. some degrees. I don't love performing. I don't love being in front of people, like in public. Or I would like to be better at it. Like, I would like to be able to be more comfortable at it, like, in general. And I think that there are these rare times where it'll feel like, you know, like good. Like,
right.
where the room feels like it's receiving, you know, what the voice that, or just the language that I'm speaking in. And that's wonderful when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of other times it's just like terrifying, or just, you know, feels really vulnerable, which
sure.
I guess everybody, you know, can relate to. But yeah, I guess I didn't, like, I guess I cared enough about it to keep putting myself out there. Even though like it wasn't like a natural, you know, just inclination for me.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up moving to Austin. Like, a lot of the times I've moved to places because I liked the music.
Oh, really? So I was going to ask, what have you been listening to this whole time? Like,
yeah.
I mean, were you changing?
I was into, you know, this was the 90s. So I was like,
you say that bashfully.
late 90s. So there was, you know, kind of that alt country thing that happened.
Sure. Uncle Tupelo?
Yeah. And I was into that genre of music quite a bit. And that probably drew me to Austin, like, just, you know, some modern form of like roots and country music being incorporated. And I mean, like, part of the reason that I was attracted to Portland, you know, was also like, I liked the music that was happening here. But I started playing music in Austin with like an all women country band, and it was really just like I answered an ad on Craigslist.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like an ad like some other woman had put out, where she was like learning the pedal steel and she wanted to find other people to play with. And somehow in that arrangement, we ended up being like just a group of women musicians. And we were just playing together for fun. And then I was the person that happened to have songs that I was writing. So we ended up, you know, a lot of the time playing my songs. But there was like there were two other singers. At one point, there were like three singers in the band who had like songs.
Right.
And then, you know, it shifted a little bit. But like we were doing it for fun, but then like somebody like was able to get a gig. They're like, oh, we can play here. And then we had a residency at like some cafe where we were playing every week. So we actually ended up performing like pretty early on in that group. And I would say it was like we weren't really super technically proficient, but like it had good energy and it had like this good you know, maybe the fact that it was all women was like something like that was, you know, like had this energy to it.
Had you been in a band prior to that?
No, that was like probably the first one that was like a band that, yeah, we called ourselves a name. And we had like...
What was the name?
It was All Night Lincoln, which my son's name is Lincoln. And he was probably like three at the time. And I don't know how that name came about, but that's like the name that we ended up using. And and then like there was another good friend of mine who I like asked to play bass, and she was like also like our children were the same age.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like that was probably the first time I spent time like learning how to communicate with other musicians.
Well, yeah, so that dynamic, did you take to it? Did it take some work?
It took because work.
You were solo before that for the most part.
Yeah, like it takes work learning how to play with people and learning how to like play on time to a drummer, like that type of thing. And communication, there was a lot of communication like to learn just, you know, about, especially for me to like communicate my ideas or to communicate, you know. So, yeah, like that went on for a while and then it kind of like dissolved into, you know, like basically like I think it had to do with I think that like I ended up playing solo after that point.
Mm-hmm.
And with a few of the musicians from that band and then like other musicians came in. And so it kind of evolved into like, you know, me doing my songs like solo. And
because of time constraints, because of social dynamics,
I think that all things are temporary. Like right. just like that band at some point, like there were three lead singers in the band
so
and we all had like very different, you know, styles. So like from that, like one of those women went on to do a different project in Austin and she like, you know, had her own band also, and she was super funny and super like she played the accordion and the violin. And then there was the other singer ended up like I think she ended up doing more acting work. So like that first it was a good I think learning ground.
It was a good starter
for
band.
Like for you know, for us like as a group, and there were like good friendships in it. But like my songs probably became like a little darker and more serious and also quieter than like, you know, this type of honky tonk country music that we were like trying to do. So
it was an upbeat kind of alt country band.
It was like a fun band, like where we made t-shirts that had like horses on them, like iron on horses, you know, like just stuff like that where it was, you know, it was like,
so it was a good time.
Yeah. But I think that like what I was really doing was, you know, like my solo songs were a bit like, you know, just more nuanced and quieter and just a little like more like, not so like there's a difference between like honky tonk country and then like roots folk music.
Sure.
So that was probably more the direction I was going into, which was like, you know, I guess folk is such a like realm that you can call so many things.
But when you're doing, I mean, you're in a band, you have a son who's three, four years old. Are you still, Do you section off parts of your artistic life, or are you still working on a manuscript or working on writing at the same time, or is it very...
I was doing all of it.
So you do a lot all the time.
Yeah. Okay. And looking back, I honestly, I kind of don't know, how I managed to keep doing things. You know, I know what a challenge it is to have, a child and young children, and then, at a point within that whole span of time, my son's father and I also split up. So I was a single parent for a while, and I was doing things practicing the nights that he would be with his father, I would be practicing and doing all my music stuff. And and then when he was with me, I would have to, it was just a lot of juggling of
right.
Trying to fit everything in. It's both hard and it's good. I look back on it and I'm grateful and I'm amazed that I was able to keep doing my creative work. I think it was also a little bit of my selfishness and stubbornness, just to that I kept doing it in I think a lot of people might not have.
Because the alternative to not doing it would have been what?
Well, just, I guess, being more of a, typical, what people, picture as a typical mother woman. I was living in Texas at the time, too. So it's,
societal,
there's gender, I definitely felt, weird at times. There's a little bit of a stigma of, I was just a weird type of woman in mm-hmm. that setting. And also being, a woman of color, or just having my particular background. But I guess I was lucky enough to have my friends, and, I had the people around me who understood what I was doing and what I was about. And my son has, we still have a good relationship.
No, I'm not. I wasn't insinuating that you were neglecting your parenting duties.
But it's
but things take time, I guess, as I'm just curious. I mean, and allotting that time from writing to music to child rearing to all the types of things.
Well, it might be also that's why, it's taken me a really long time to do things, too. Where, I had, two books that came out. I mean, really, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. It's been the last, 10 or 15 years of, working. I don't know. I guess I've been pretty productive, but...
Well, it seems like you've been very productive and also kind of, subtly tenacious, too.
I've been working on it. There's definitely times that it's been, it feels like I'm... working in a vacuum, where it's been very lonely, it's been hard, I'm not sure what I'm doing or if I should be doing it.
In terms of music, writing, both, all of it?
Both, really.
Yeah.
Really between 2006, 2007 and 2015, I guess I kind of was really working in an area that was my own path,
mm-hmm.
and did feel at times there wasn't really a context for what I was doing.
With regards to genre, with regards to anything?
Both. Yeah. Just kind of doing this hybrid genre of writing and then trying to incorporate music, writing songs that were they're not fitting into a typical folk album or whatever.
Sure.
But it was really good too, going way out, into left field, creatively,
mm-hmm.
I figured out something,
sure.
for myself. And I guess I kind of looking back on it, I see that was part of the process. And I've definitely moved away from kind of trying to fit into this thing that was Americana music or mm-hmm. country music or even songwriter folk music. It's definitely become a more experimental or leaning toward that or something realm for me. So it's been a big
So you're in Austin, you're starting. I mean, you've already written your own songs. Was that a big process too, though? I mean, because that started in San Francisco.
Yeah, I started writing them. And then I guess it's like that's the one thing I had. Like I was writing songs and then, you know, I could bring those into like a room with musicians and like that would be, you know, something to gather around. Some of the key musicians that I met in Austin that kind of like, you know, helped like develop my solo songs were like I played with a trio, like a mandolin multi-interest instrumentalist for a while and a bass player. And that was probably like the heart of like what I did in Austin as far as like that. I recorded like my first album with that lineup. And there was also a dobro player and guitar player who was like, who would come in. And they were great. Like they were really good intuitive musicians.
But you were the band leader.
I guess
because they like, were your they were songs.
It was like around my project. So yeah. So basically, you know, it was under my name and it was my project and my songs. But, you know, it was like having other musicians to help like develop that, those songs and that sound.
And was that a role that you took to? Like, this is my thing.
I don't know if I'm like. I'm like it's like the word band leader is like mystifying. To
you're
me.
What's no, a better word?
I think that like it's part of what like I think that I don't have enough. Like I was really fortunate to work with people who like just came in and kind of intuitively like they're good musicians. Like you know they could play, but there was enough of a rapport like between us, or like just creatively like they understood the song without me like. Having to like give a lot of direction and those have been like the best relationships for me. And that's, it's generally like, that's probably how most of my creative relationships collaborations have worked. So I'm a little bit, like shy or just not really adept at giving direction or being like a, you know, a band leader, like where you're like, you know, this part's supposed to happen here or this, like, it's more, for me, it's a more like, I like this person. There's like some like chemistry or there's some connection. And
it's a shared vision.
Let's just see what happens. Yeah. And I like that idea of,
no matter who brings the song, it's a collective.
Yeah. And I feel like, I guess it's like, I've always been just that feeling of like me relying on other people to like flesh out my songs also made me a little bit uncomfortable. So I do like it when it's more of a like shared thing that it's like, yeah, we're creating this sound together. And I've come to understand that those relationships, like they're like, I had that group like in Austin, there were a couple people that I worked with, for, you know, that brief span of time. I mean like whatever, a few years.
How long did you live in Austin?
Like 8 years total.
So a while.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, like things move on, like people kind of like outgrow projects or they move on to like wanting to do something else. And, so I've come to understand that like these relationships kind of come in and out, you know,
in a symbiotic way kind of.
Yeah. Or just like they're, it's like, it's a little bit like dating, I guess, where it's like,
oh God, okay.
You know?
I'm in the, yeah.
Yeah. Like you're just like it, it's sometimes it works for a little while and then like, you know, so like there were some musicians I worked with in Austin and then kind of like the next people that I worked with were in Portland. And that's been like a couple that really not that many. But there was, I might be like the East West.
Right.
Album,
which 2015.
And it started that in like, I recorded it in like 2012, like 2013, I started that process and then it kind of took a while to finish. But I worked with a guitarist here who was this like really special musician and just artist. And it was like this, like that was the person that I recorded the East part with.
Is that the first five songs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then West is the last five songs.
Yeah. And they're not, and the West album is, am I getting like too much in the weeds? Like it's like, I'm kind of.
No. I mean, so that album came out, it came out in 2015. It was released in 2015.
I released it officially, like kind of the whole package, like in 2015 with the book. And there was that, the memoir project that went with that cycle of songs.
And you started working on it in 2012.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. And I even was working on it earlier than that. Like I wrote some of those songs initially in like 2008.
Oh.
And I had like started the process of trying to record some of them in like, you know, with somebody in Austin, and it kind of didn't work out. So it was an ongoing, like, long process. And then the songs in the West half are like a little bit of a mix of like working with different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it kind of shows, like, the cohesiveness of it is like not as much. But I feel like that it's reflective of like a lot of what I was going through.
Well, it's, I mean, for people, it's, you said, I mean, we're talking about Loretta Lynn,
yeah.
And it's not a country album. I wouldn't define that as a country album. I mean,
yeah.
It's very different than, I guess, some of your earlier influences, that album.
Yeah, the East West.
The East West.
Like, it was definitely a departure from, like, I feel like I did the same path of, you know, like, I was reading, like, whatever, like John Steinbeck or Raymond Carver. Or like
back
very,
in the day.
Like, with my writing. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, like, some of the first, you know, learning ground for me was like this very like the American short story.
Mm-hmm.
And
this goes back to Iowa though. That's mm-hmm. what, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, you can call it like just a process of like, I don't want to use the word like decolonizing, but like, it is like there are definitely things that I internalized growing up in America and growing up in a small town and in white culture and like mm-hmm. having like, you know, a white father, like there's, and going to schools, like whatever schools I went through, that these were like the dominant, like measures that were put forward.
Sure.
And I think that like, it's so folk and country music was a little bit of like, okay, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to fit into this world. And then, you know, like at some point, I guess I had to like let that go,
mm-hmm.
which was really for the better.
But this isn't like a conscious decision either, right? It's not like you wake up one morning like, I'm going to listen to something different, or is it?
I would say that one of the things that came in for me was, and it's not like I hadn't been listening to alternative music, but like I put Sigur Rós on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I saw them for the first time in like the early 2000s or something. And that was
in Austin?
Yeah. Okay. That was like kind of a transformative experience.
Sure.
Where like I saw some music that was like, oh, like that just like, you know, something clicked.
Was it at a big place or in early aughts?
Ooh, what was it?
I've never been to Austin.
No, it wasn't like, yeah, it was like it was like the equivalent of, you know, like the Schnitzer. Like it was like a sit down venue.
A little austere though too.
Yeah, that had like, you know, a stage and when they played, they had like, that show, they had like this veil in front of them, like a screen.
Oh.
And so you couldn't actually see the band, like you saw their silhouettes and then there was just lights like on the screen, and just that whole experience of being transported into like, you know, an atmosphere. And
did you know them before? Did you go on a whim?
No, my partner like had known about them, so he brought it, like he was the first one that you know, played that music for me. And yeah, so it was a new, like at the time it was like definitely different than what I was like kind of steeping myself in, like living in Austin, Texas, and like, you know, associating mostly with people that played like acoustic instruments.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they weren't that big either.
No, they were still like, no, yeah, they were still on the smaller side,
yeah,
still
I'm
at
in.
That time. Yeah.
I was going to say now they're one of the most well-known bands in the world, but they're not. But they're still bigger. I mean, people know.
They're bigger now. Yeah. 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 And they're, yeah, I still love them. And yeah.
Did you, so you see them, and then again, it's not, is it something where you consciously decide to move, or you actually move towns and everything kind of was?
Yeah. I'd say that's maybe all like a part of like it was just like the passage my life was going mm-hmm. in. I left Austin in 2007, and that was also the same year that the person that I'm with now is somebody that I knew from California from like way back. Like we went to college together way back in San Francisco, and he came back into my life like many years later. And initially he moved out to Texas, you know, from LA, and like he didn't really like Texas. Like it was just,
moved to Austin or another part. Oh, moved to Austin. Yeah.
And so that was part of the reason, like, that we like decided to move back west. And I think coming back west was also like, maybe it was like it was a little bit of a return time. Mm-hmm. Like I had spent 8 years in Austin and, you know,
so
it's like Austin was like, and maybe it's still this way, but like it was like you could be there and then like you wake up and it's like 5 years later and like the same thing is still going on.
Oh.
You know, or that's kind of what it felt like at the time, where it was a good time for me to leave. Like, mm-hmm. I think I kind of hit my ceiling as far as like what I could do in Austin and how much I could grow, like just professionally. Like I'm, you know, I was like adjunct faculty, like it was, right. You know, like I was, it was still a struggle to feel like, you know, I was like building anything. And then my family, like my father, stepfather had, when he retired, he moved out to Oregon, mm-hmm. the southern coast, and he ended up dying out there. And that was kind of my entry to Oregon, was, you know, him moving there and then his death. So the first time I came to Oregon, like, was to that town, like, the week that he died. And that was, like, a really big, like, I felt a lot. Like, and I, you know, the circumstances in my life would make it, like, that it was a big moment just for my family. But I also felt a connection to, like, the land, and especially to the coast.
Hmm.
And it might be colored by the fact that, like, you know, this really important person in my life, like, you know, that's where he ended. Like, that's where his life ended. But so that stayed with me as far as, like, just a place to be. It's probably, like, I would say, like, that, the Oregon coast, and just especially that, like, around Bandon, is probably some of the strongest, like, just kind of land, geographical, just place, mm-hmm. like, you know, I felt like in my gut, like something.
It's tangible almost.
Yeah. Like I feel like I can relax there, like more than many other places. Or I feel like I can forget, you know, sure. like other things in other places. So that's kind of like the heart of like why I'm in Oregon.
Right.
Like that's, and then Portland just seemed like a logical, like, town. Like, we liked it, and it's, you know, it had, like, more going on than, you know.
There's good music.
Yeah, so.
Well, you said before, I mean, you move places where there's good music, or, I mean, obviously,
yeah,
kind of impactful feelings.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, some people, they move for jobs, or they move out of, I mean, that's an interesting way to kind of live one's life. I mean, in a healthy way. I was in Omaha for the last 2 years,
and I
didn't like it, but I moved there for a job, and I tried to make myself like it.
You said you're from?
I'm from Reno, Nevada,
okay.
But I moved here originally in 2005, and then I moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, because I did my PhD at University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
Yeah.
So I knew Nebraska a little bit, but when I was at UNL, I was in school, you know, so you come into like a community, like I was very cloistered.
Yeah.
And then I moved back here in 2013, January of 2013.
Okay.
And I was here for 3.5 years and I liked it. But then kind of like you were saying in Austin, I was just adjuncting here. So I applied for a bunch of jobs, got this job at a small liberal arts college outside of Omaha. And I moved back and I was like, well, this is maybe it. You know, this is like
trying to do the thing, like
trying
practical.
To do the thing that the practical thing, totally. I mean, it's a small school tenure trial, like, you know, but then I reviled it, so.
Well, the Midwest, like
the mid,
I understand. I would rather be on the coast,
but it's healthier, I think, to say, I mean, again, it's a luxury and maybe a privilege, but
totally.
To say this place feels like home. I can relax here. I can forget about what I, you know, like, that seems like a good thing to be able to do and to actually do it.
Sure.
Because some people go on vacation, they're like, oh, I wish I could live in whatever, you know, but they won't because they won't allow themselves that. And again, it's hard to just up and move, but
it is a luxury.
Like, yeah. Well, I'm not saying that you're,
but I'm also like a little bit of an like not super practical person.
Right, but I think it's worked for you. I mean,
I've
we live in a not practical world. Like,
yeah. I guess I've followed like art, and I've spent a lot of years like juggling, like kind of like, you know, the freelance life or just figuring out how to or I live really frugally. Like that's also part of it. But yeah, I wouldn't advise other people in the same way necessarily. My jobs are good.
But that kind of, so you're the Sense EP, the Mother and the Sea, the album you just put out. I mean, you talk about gift economies and Lewis Hyde. I mean, because, well, I guess your music and your writing, is it more important to you, I guess, artistically rather than monetarily, or
probably, like, definitely. I'm not very motivated by money. Okay. I guess people have the different things that they're motivated by, and it's like, I mean, of course, like, I need it and I care about it, but I think that I've learned, like, that I'm more motivated by like love and like art and belief. So the times in my life that I've tried to do something because it seemed like a good idea, like I should try to write an article and send it to this magazine, you know, or I should try to develop this, or hasn't really worked for me, like even if I've tried, or like, so I guess I try to find, that's where I try to work from is like, and then definitely with music. I mean, there's been a lot of shoulds, as in like, you know, just feeling like it should be this way, or like, and
that other people put on you, or that you put on yourself?
That I put on myself.
Okay.
Like, more like, you know, and I feel like I've kind of come to a good place, like where it was also just like the process of music depends on like so much on like other relationships with other people, that I guess, but you know, there were times when I spent money to record.
Right.
Which
is common.
I mean, totally. That's why I'm like, I'm not knocking it. That's like, well, that's great. But I also like I prefer those relationships where it felt like, you know, there's a creative friendship, like kind of at the heart of it. And that has I feel more comfortable in or that I'm able to do enough of it like myself now, or like, or what I want to do is like, it's become this like small intimate thing that I can like, I know how to handle. And I think it's just been a lot of years of like, you know, having, you know, like I've found the friends, or like, I know that there are people I can call on if I need to.
Right.
And I guess like I can talk about like Barry Brousseau.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, cause helped him edit his poetry manuscript, and then he,
and he's just a wonderful, like, local person. He's been in the Portland music scene for over 20 years. He played in a band called the Jimmies for, like a lot of years. And,
The Jimmies.
Yeah. Like more of a rock, like, band, and he does like this, like, he's very versatile. Like, he does something that is, I don't want to call it metal, but it's like some kind of like heavy,
so very different, like, then what he, like, played at the Beacon Sound Show
he did like more of a, like, more heavy, like, it's, I'm not, so, I don't have the vocabulary for it,
right.
Like, it's something in between like heavy and like metal. And he has like a duo with his brother called Grandhead, which they still do that kind of music. And then he also has this like solo, like minimalist folk that he does. And I met him like initially through the open mics here in Portland. Like, there was one open mic that was like at White Eagle Saloon for a while.
And
it was run by John Vecchiarelli, like initially when I first started going to it. And so I met like a group of songwriters around that scene, who have just like, that's been kind of like my Portland, like those were the Portland people that I most connected to, just other songwriters. And I
this is years ago, or this is,
this is here, like in Portland.
Okay.
Like, so that was, you know, probably around the time I started like, you know, venturing out to like, open mics are a good way to meet people when you move to a new town,
no,
too, and just to see what's going on. And like, I don't know, 2012, 2013, okay. something like that.
And it was a somewhat, it was a supportive community. I mean, because some open mics, or at least like the stand-up community in Omaha, I thought was not that supportive. But
I can hear
the open, it was, people were into other, they're into what other people were doing and created.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say like, I guess maybe you've find, you know, I mean, I've heard different things about it, but that was one of the things that struck me about Portland, you know, is that both in the poetry and the music scene, just as much as I've encountered it, was that people are really supportive and kind of nurturing, and they actually listen to each other. So maybe I've just been fortunate to, like, you know, meet pretty nice people. But like Barry was, he has his label, like it's a very small, like micro label, like Gorby International Records.
Right.
And he was initially, when I started first talking to him, he was like, he was just saying that he doesn't charge money, or he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do things for money. And I guess, like, I get that. Like, I like that. Like, there is like something, like, if I think about it in a wider, like more philosophical thing. And that's why I like quoted the Lewis Hyde, like where, like there is something about that energy of like just of not, you know, not bringing money into it,
Which changes everything.
Yeah,
right.
I mean. And I would say that like the recordings that I have spent money on, just to varying degrees, like, you know, it's a little more complicated, and maybe there's a little more pressure because it's like, you know, you're putting money into it and you're hiring people and you're hiring a studio, and for what I'm doing, or like so far, you know, what, like just this small intimate thing, like it just made it has felt better, like to kind of like locate it outside of that that realm of aspiration, if that makes sense.
For East West, did you that was a in a studio?
No, that one was studio, like I went to Type Foundry.
Okay.
But see, I've had, you know, like I worked with Dylan Majerik at Type Foundry, and he was great, and I would say that like Dylan, like for the recording of that album, at one point he just loaned me a microphone, and like I took it home and I recorded the vocals at home, like, for some of the songs, and I learned a lot from that, and it was like actually really great. Like I feel like Dylan kind of handed me like he kind of like instilled confidence in me in a way, and like kind of let me like figure some things out and kind of figure out like what I could do. And and I mean, we still had like, you know, studio days, but there were like some of the songs that I like did some of those vocals or parts of them at home
in a way that was more comfortable for you.
Yeah, like it was just, you know, in my, you know, in a room in my home, and it was like I could take time and I could sit there and like, you know, like I could go over things and take a lot of time, where like in the studio, like you're, you know, you have like 8 hours of the day, and you're trying to so I think it's the difference between, like, you know, I guess I'm learning that I like to work slowly, and that was a process, and there was something that, you know, I could do in private too, if I'm like, you know, really trying to do these close vocals and I'm like trying to listen to them, that that I learned a lot from. Or, you know, it's, I feel more comfortable with the process now.
Sure.
From like realizing that I could do some of that in a room by myself.
Right.
But not to say that like the studio experience was great too. Like, you know,
it was just a different experience.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so that was like that. And then, yeah, but for the Sense EP, like that was entirely like, we recorded on a 8-track, like not like a digital 8-track, like one of those older ones. So not like, you know, on a computer. And it was in a house, like a semi-abandoned house of our friend John Ransom. Mm-hmm. It was like his family home, I think, where I talked about it at the show. And, you know, so it was like just it was a much more like lo-fi casual setting for sure.
In a conducive way.
Yeah, yeah. And just...
And you're happy without sounds? I mean, both... Yeah.
I'm really happy with it. It took a while just because of, like, time and just life and, like, other projects and things happening. But yeah, it's...
And then do you ever anticipate in the future, like, touring? Or is that not, you can't really?
I haven't thought about it in like any traditional sense. Like, I guess like I would play shows if it felt right to. But I think that I'm like not so interested in like doing the, you know, like playing a lot of like cafes or I think I do better in rooms that are, you know, like listening rooms or just a little more focused.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm enjoying like kind of exploring how to combine poetry and music or just these spaces where it's, you know, a little more of an art space maybe or just, yeah.
Right.
But
and then I guess just to end, I mean, does success differ for you in poetry or in writing versus music, or is it all part and parcel of the same whole?
I guess maybe they're all kind of like related.
Okay.
As far as like success would just be, you know, at the end of like my life of having like a body of work that, you know, I felt like proud about and that had some context or existed.
But not just writing, like just, I mean, because you make multiple things. So a body of work that.
Yeah, that like, that has all the facets. You know, just, I'm like right now I'm kind of in the midst of like trying to explore this hybrid realm. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like.
In writing, but also music too.
Yeah, like I'm trying to combine like image, text, and music.
Oh.
So I am interested in exploring like I'm happy to just like make music too. But I would like to find some way that it can all exist within a space and you know, or the pieces all connect. I guess I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, no, but it's I mean, I think you're close. Okay, I think we're good.
Okay.
You feel good?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to The Steer, recorded at KBOO Radio, broadcast on dublab.com, hosted by Jeff Alessandrelli and Sonny Bleckinger. For more, see our website at www.the-steer.com. You can download our episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and anywhere podcasts are found.